Raising women's voices, one story at a time. Welcome to the She Said Project Podcast. So it's a great day in the She Said Project podcast studio. Say that five times fast.
No, because I just want to get to it because she doesn't know it yet, but my new best friend is in the house. So go ahead.
Okay, I don't know how you think she's your new best friend. I spent months with this woman in the amazing cast, and That's What She Said, Danville. This is Jeanette Jerzyk, by the way, national director of the She Said Project, and I had the sheer privilege of directing this cast this past year.
Yes. Well, I don't know why you're showing off and trying to make me feel bad right out of the gates. I didn't spend months with these people, but I loved the Danville show. This is Carrie Rosso, by the way. I'm just trying to rush because I want her on the air. Carrie Rosso, blah, 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 co-founder.
Carrie, you're making me feel like you don't want to just talk to me.
Well, I love you, and we can chat after the show, but I loved everything about the Danville show.
It was an absolutely magical night.
I mean, it really was. It was storming. Mm-hmm. Like, the mood was set, and then I loved that show. But I have to tell you, our speaker, I feel like, was one of my high school best friends.
She does have that vibe. Absolutely.
Yes.
Like, you've known her for years. You know, you maybe partied a little bit at some point in your life. I don't know.
Yes. Yes.
She's definitely an amazing human that I'm so grateful to know. And now I'm really grateful that our listeners are going to get to know Bonnie Newberry from That's What She Said, Danville. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to our little chat fest.
Hi, Bonnie. I'm over here. I'm like so fangirling. I feel like I'm like, hi, Bonnie.
we gotta link up soon.
Yes. I'm like, do you want to come over? I'll brush your hair. We can try on each other's clothes and do each other's makeup. It's going to be awesome.
Yes.
Okay. If the next sentence is try on each other's skin.
Hey.
Seriously.
It puts the lotion on.
Carrie's going too far. Too far.
Too far. I'm sorry. I hope I'm not scaring you, Bonnie, but I was just... Like, you have that ability. I've seen you in several different venues, and now it makes it sound like I'm stalking you at the grocery.
No,
I saw you sing.
She's a singer, yes.
I saw you sing at another event, but every single time I've noticed, you just have that thing about you that makes people, you put people at ease, and everyone, I think everybody thinks you're their best friend.
Do you get that a lot, Bonnie?
I do. I try to be, you know, everybody's best friend. Everybody needs a best friend. Even if they only need me for 10 minutes, that's fine.
Hey, whatever. It took a turn. Sometimes it only takes 10 minutes, but whatever.
Okay, that's what she said. And Bonnie, I need you for a lot more than 10 minutes in my life. But you were so raw and vulnerable in your story. You had gone through a series of traumatic events, but you did not dwell on them. When you put your story together, you shared that they happened, and then you talked a lot about your healing journey and what got you to, you know, who you are today. And I got the impression that you have put a lot of those pieces together, and you present in this world like a really together person who gives back to others. Do you think I captured that right?
I mean, I don't want anybody to think I have it together.
Oh, come on. I was trying to cover for you.
I have done a lot of emotional healing deliberately and intentionally. And I think that that's probably what people pick up on when they meet me, because I'm not going to ever come from a place of judgment. I mean, you've heard my story, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. Like, why in the world would I ever judge anyone when I've been in this situation where, you know, I just needed a hug. I just needed somebody to say, you know, you're not a terrible human being. So I just try to be that all the time. I don't try. That's just who I am. I just am.
It translates. That's exactly the impression that I think you give to everybody. And you, it sort of gave people permission, like whenever you see that, because otherwise if someone is talking and, you know, sometimes it can feel a little judgy, or it can feel like, you know, and if for $9.99, you can be perfect too. And
right.
And you just make it feel like there's nothing that you can say. Everyone has a seat at this table. There's no judgment. Hugs all around.
Yes. About 3 years ago, as I was kind of a year into this healing journey, a friend of mine who's very, as I call, neurospicy, and he has like some social anxiety issues. And he was like, Bonnie, you make me feel like I can just be myself. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that. But that's actually what I want everyone to feel when they are around me, because I don't want you to be fake. I'm not going to be fake. I couldn't be fake if I tried, and I tried. Mm-hmm. It just gets real awkward and stiff. So
that's what he said. Well, so how, sorry, I couldn't, you tossed that right to me. Sorry.
I mean, I would expect it from my bestie. It's fine.
Yeah, that's all right. So how did you wind up on that stage that night? Who roped you in?
It was Amanda Crowes. And actually I had gone to school with her, but we were a few years separate. We went to a school called Bismarck, and there were maybe 50 kids in my graduating class. And my class graduated when both schools combined.
Wow, so big time. Imagine.
Yeah, so we all knew each other in passing, and one of Amanda's best friends is the sister of one of my good friends. And so when this opportunity came up, I guess Amanda told other Amanda that they should have me. And I can only assume it is from the soliloquies that I would write on Facebook. A lot of opinions about a lot of things.
Do you use Facebook as your outlet to speak to the world?
I don't anymore.
That sounds like a story.
Sounds like a lesson learned.
Yeah. I'm trying to be a professional, though.
So. I'm a professional MF-er.
But what
sorry,
I took.
Sorry.
Oh, girl. What I took from that, though, is that women need an outlet. See my segue here? I've got a transitional moment here. Yep. Like, to say something profound. But women need an outlet to talk about the hard things. And I have seen friends use Facebook as that outlet because they don't have anything else. And Carrie, when you created That's What She Said, I don't know if that was the original goal, but that is what it is. It is that safe space for women to share those hard things. We have amazing conversations during the process. Not everything we talk about makes it to the stage, but man, oh man, does it feel good to have like-minded women in a room. We strip away all of the pretense, all of the small talk, and we get to real hard topics and get to know each other and support each other. The sense of relief that you've been heard and there's empathy and sympathy and all of the pathies, we're just there. And I absolutely experienced that with your cast, Bonnie.
So obviously I've not been in any other She Said. That would be weird. But Danville's cast is, and we're still very close. I actually just caught up with Tiara last week. We had coffee. Janaea and I catch up randomly. I just wrote an article about her for Smile Politely. Mary Catherine and I see each other pretty regularly at this point. But to kind of build on what you said about an outlet for women, it was Hannah Landis on the first time that we got together. She said, believe women when they tell you their stories.
Amen.
And as a woman that has worked in male-dominated industries my entire life, I got chills even just talking to you about it right now, because it's not even just that we can't tell our stories, it's that they're not believed all the time. You feel like you have to back it up, or you're overreacting, or you're doing whatever, if you're just speaking about what happened to you. So that when Hannah Landis said that day, it's lived in the back of my mind since then.
Wow. Me too. I love that quote. And not even about being believed that, but being valued. You know, when we started this, it was women in my neighborhood. We had started something called a MOFFICE, the Mom Office, because we were saying when women either, you know, many of us had been used to talking to our women friends around the water cooler or working with them or collaborating, or we had, many of us had been on, you know, sports teams in high school and college. And then all of a sudden you are working from home or you're raising babies and you don't, you know, you're just talking gibberish with a 2-year-old all day. And there's this just this strong need for women to be together and tell, whether we're like yucking it up and making She Said jokes or telling really deep stories from our past, knowing that we have women who aren't going to just believe us, but value the importance of telling those stories. It's huge. And so that was sort of like the beginning of wanting to do this, is like having space for women to tell the funny ones and the serious ones. And because everybody who comes to a She Said show, they're there to laugh or support you. Everybody there values, you know, that's why they're there. And it's just this magical, magical thing. And, you know, I feel that way every show. But, man, Danville was just, it was something special.
Let's cut to the tape.
Yeah.
No, I'm so mesmerized by Carrie's soliloquy over here. I feel like we should share this treasure with our audience. So let's take a moment. Let's listen to Bonnie's performance from That's What She Said, Danville, on stage earlier this year, and her story, By My Bootstraps.
I like to joke that I was born so poor, I had to sew the bootstraps on before I could pull myself up by them. I was born in Danville and grew up in Vermilion County. My parents got a divorce when I was 7, and my dad moved to St. Louis when I was 9. Yes, that did give me what some people might call daddy issues, but what I like to call trust, self-worth, and self-esteem issues. I was bullied in grade school and junior high like a lot of other kids. I had Coke bottle glasses. I've never been a thin girl by any means. And I had a gap so big in my front teeth you could fit a couch through it, according to my classmates. I experienced my first sexual assault when I was 14. My next when I was 16. The man that assaulted me was 33 years old. I later had to change his oil when I worked at a quick change oil place in town. The first time he came in, I hid in the pit, told my coworker, and had a panic attack about it. That second time, I may or may not have left his oil filter a little loose, but that's not the point. I was 19 when I had my first baby, and I was 20 when my sister came home from her first heroin overdose. 6 weeks later, I moved into a house with crooked floors and shag carpet, but no heroin. I worked a full-time job, a part-time job, and I sang 4 to 6 nights a week for about 3 years to make the money I needed. I was diagnosed with depression and then later bipolar disorder in my early 20s. Given some medication, told therapy's probably not what you need, and turned into a very numb robot for about 5 years of my life. By the way, everyone can benefit from therapy. That doctor gave me a Band-Aid for a gut shot. I was married and divorced before I was 31. I had met someone that checked all of the boxes that society labels strong man. And it turns out I also checked the boxes that society labels strong man. Yeah. Yeah. And after years of trying to make myself fit into a box I was never made for, making myself smaller and easier to consume for the male ego, I realized I could be myself and only have half the laundry of a married woman. I say all this to try to give an idea of how most of my life has been spent jumping from traumatic event to traumatic event, and therefore how little time I ever had to really process any of that. Hell, I didn't even know what trauma was until COVID. I had always heard, if things are hard, grab them bootstraps. That's all it takes. Then one summer night, while everything was shut down, someone I thought I could trust drank way too much. He started getting more and more aggressive. And I remembered a time when I was a teenage girl and a grown man who was drunk told me he was going to take my horse and tie her to his truck and drag her down the road. And I remember how after he said that, my friend's mom physically removed him from that campground. And when she did that, I was like, that's a bad bitch. But then she looked at me and she said, when they're drunk, just do what they say. It will be easier when you just do what they want. You will have a better chance of staying alive. That night, with everything shut down and everyone shut into their houses, I did everything he wanted. And I still ended up broken and bruised. I was compliant. I was smiling. And nothing went the way it was supposed to. After that night, I tried pretending everything was fine, like I had my entire life. I thought, if I just push through this, I'll get over it, and everything will go back to how it was. But this time was different. The Bonnie I was had gone. She was too damaged. She had been through her years of hell and retreated rightfully so. I was completely empty, a walking void. And really describing this feeling to you does not do it justice. It is overwhelming despair without the release of crying. I took my first grippy sock vacation in August of that year. I made sure my kids would be with their dad. I didn't have any gigs lined up at the guys at the shop where I worked. They would figure that out. I went into the hospital with the intention of not just getting my head above water, but gaining tools to manage my mental health better. I left with my face barely breaking the surface and a whole lot of Led Zeppelin knowledge. I read their autobiography while I was in there. Not a lot to do. That's a long way of saying I felt like I haven't been given many tools. I had been given medication and a referral to see a psychiatrist, but unfortunately, none were accepting patients at that time. Now I've been poor my entire life. Poor white trash, as my friend's mother once called me. But you know what poor people are good at? Grabbing those bootstraps and giving them a good tug. Even if people better off than us don't think that's what we're doing. I eventually found a doctor in Champaign, which was difficult to facilitate since I worked a full-time job in Danville. But then my insurance didn't want to cover the medication I just spent 6 months trying to get. So I did the thing they say not to do. I started doing my own research. Bipolar disorder is something I will live with my entire life. I can either keep doing this exhausting and failing dance, or I can grab them bootstraps and pull myself to the next step. The thing about this mental illness is that, yes, you will cycle between moods, but they're not like regular moods. They are super extreme, all-consuming moods. And as you grow, triggers get attached to these moods. So I have this knowledge and the will to be a functioning adult, kind of. So I have to start learning my triggers and then battling my own brain response. While my brain is screaming, yes, burn it all down, you are beyond reproach. The first time I took on one of these triggers, I was getting ready for church. I had a terrible self-image. I really, really hated my body. And so every time I would get dressed to try and look nice, my brain would tell me how gross I looked. Why was I even trying? I'd never be pretty. I'm gross, poor, fat, white trash. But at that point in my life, 2.5 years ago, I was 20% body fat. Elder Bierman had recently shut down, so I had some nice clothes. I decided this would be the first trigger to tackle. So one Sunday, I tell my family, stay out of my room. I go into my room, put on an outfit, exhale. It was hard not to cry, not to scream and throw my clothes, but I breathed my way through it, and I've never felt that way again getting dressed. But I also stopped caring about what looked cool, because me and Stevie Nicks think I look real cool, okay? But I had a lot of little battles like that over the course of the last 2.5 years. I still have them. They are just far fewer and more in between. But after I felt that emptiness, that nothingness, there was one thing I knew for sure. If I could help make sure that no one ever had to feel like that again, I'd do it. So I try every day to encourage women around me. Sometimes they think I'm weird. Like the girl at my office that I invited to lunch on the second day, and then she told everybody in the office I was a weirdo. Joke's on her, I am. And stuff like that made me want to stop being kind to people. It really made me want to just not deal with society at all. But I just had to learn boundaries. I had to learn to really not expect myself from other people and to just be kind with no expectation. I think a lot of people are mean because it's easier. But I'm poor. I'm not afraid of a challenge. During this time of inner work in my life, I found my circle of friends changing. I have an amazing group of friends that genuinely love and support each other, people I can lean on. People that go Pokemon go hunting with me. All the dopamine, get me a Pikachu. But eventually, I got tired of going around and farting rainbows and puking butterflies and watching other people just be mean for sport. Mean for no reason or just because they're ignorant. So I stopped letting that little stuff slide. I started addressing the people using slurs in front of me. I didn't keep quiet when people were speaking out of ignorance. I started saying the quiet part out loud. I'm not mean about it, and I'll walk away rather than have a pointless debate. Because I know no one listens to an emotional woman. I just say the things that, to me, a decent human being would say. I'm a singer in a cover band. We do a Kacey Musgrave song I love, and the chorus goes, makes lots of noise, kiss lots of boys, or kiss lots of girls, if that's what you're into. I have a few stories about this song, but the one that sticks with me the most was in Attica, Indiana. After our set, a woman came and hugged me, crying, thanking us for doing that song there and telling me about her daughter's journey. And so when the opportunity to help organize the first Pride event in Vermilion County kind of landed in my lap, I knew I wanted to do it as best I could. If I could help create a safe place for people, I wanted to be all in. Our budget was $1,000, and we had 3 weeks. Let me grab them beach straps. The day of Pride, it rained, which meant no bubble man. It was our hottest item. One of the author's skid plates fell off her car on her drive down from Chicago. One of our two drag queens canceled that morning. And I, in the middle of the event, had to come back here to watch my son play bass and then drive up to Rossville. But the community was more excited that the event existed than hearing what else we had planned for them. I got to spend an amazing day with amazing people celebrating who we are. And I'll do it again this year. Just bigger, better, and gayer.
Now we can talk in detail. And so your story ends that we're going to do it again this year, just bigger, better, and gayer.
Oh, girl, did we, though.
Did you? Did you get to organize Pride again this past year?
So, are you ready?
I'm ready.
So I shared in my story that initially it was me and two other ladies. The other lady that stuck with me through it is Lacey Miller, and she was our hair and makeup artist for She Said Danville.
What? That's awesome.
Yeah. So after She Said, Lacey and I kind of put the call out to anybody who would be interested in helping, and about 9 people showed up, and it was just the 9 correct people in the room at the right time, and we became a 501(c)(3) nonprofit organization called the VC Pride Coalition.
Oh my God.
And we started doing some fundraising. So again, Lacey and I had been paying out of pocket for everything. We hired Janaea, DJ Silky, to DJ for us. And I had played a gig and I was like, I'm going to pay Janaea for her gig with my gig money. And we got so many donations. We had to ask for more space. We had so many vendors. We had over 1,000 people in attendance for the very first, like, real Pride Fest in Vermilion County. And it was, like, I have chills telling you guys about it right now. It was magical. It was the hottest day of June. We were running around, you know, making sure our vendors had water, making sure everybody had, you know, food and taking breaks if they needed it. And our vendors were like, we kept the fees low. Really, like, first of all, you guys kept it affordable and you took care of us. And I was like, I work in the entertainment industry. I know how to take care of you guys so that you'll come back. It was fantastic. We had an after party and then Lacey was actually crowned Queen of the Gays for this year.
I'm coming for that title next year.
What an honor. Yeah.
Next year. Yeah. It really catapulted after She Said, and it was definitely bigger, better, and gayer.
That is awesome.
That's amazing. And that stems from your commitment to give back to your community. And, you know, to this, it sounds like this is like a perfect fit for your passion and your calling.
It has been wonderful. The opportunities to help, the ways that we can show up, the voices that we are giving people. I'm so excited that this, our tiny little let's throw a Pride event in June, has turned into an entire organization.
That is fantastic. Congratulations. And I know without a doubt, creating these safe spaces absolutely, like you said, gives people a voice, helps with mental health, anxiety, depression, things that people struggle with because they feel so isolated. And you have created community and taken all of your experiences and paid it forward. And that is just awesome to hear.
And I hope it encourages people, like, don't keep waiting for someone to come and save the day. Like, no one's coming. It's us. Save the day.
Pull up those bootstraps.
Pull up your bootstraps. I love that.
I remember when we came up with the title, like, it was just, it encapsulates everything that you had been through, that you had to find a way, that, like Carrie said, no one was going to show up. You had to suffer through, push through, and come out the other side. Like, your story about how you basically diagnosed your own mental health crisis and did your own research and you found your own ways to cope. That was an inspiration right there. Do you still think about those times in your life?
I do. I have a mental illness. I have bipolar disorder and I have obsessive compulsive disorder. So I, knock on wood, okay, because I'm not manic right now. but it is something that I have to think about every single day. I have to make sure I'm eating because I will just forget to eat. Sometimes I'll feel this anger that I kind of described it in the story, like you feel it, it just consumes you. And instead of riding that wave, I have had to figure out, you know, some ways to walk off, breathe. You know, you're overreacting to this. So I think about it every day.
For a long time, though, you weren't overreacting and people were telling you, you know, get over it because things happened. And so to hear you say that you're now learning how to walk away and breathe through things, you know, like that shouldn't always be the answer. People should recognize when there is a mental health crisis and support women and people who need to talk to someone, who need to get help. And I wish there was something we could do about that in not just community, but in this country. Like, mental health is a huge hot topic and a trigger topic right now. But you stood on a stage and you shared it very, very bravely. And I totally commend you for that.
So I kind of knew I was bipolar in like the mid-90s. I remember when Aaliyah died, the singer. Mm-hmm. And it was probably like 12:30 in the morning and the radio station like cuts out to announce that she had died. And you would have thought my own mother died. Mm. That's actually the moment that I look back to now as an adult. And I'm like, that was the first sign. I should maybe not have been that devastated mm-hmm. about that.
I think recognize, like, self-regulating, self-awareness, knowing, like, exactly that moment, being able to look back and go, yeah, you know what? But the ideally will be when you're in that moment and like, okay, I'm having these big feelings, but I know either it's not an overreaction and I'm going to stick to whatever path I'm on, or recognizing, yep, this doesn't match. The emotions aren't matching the situation. And here are the things that others have taught me or that I've learned will help. I think exactly what you did, getting up and talking about it, helps to destigmatize conversations about it and sharing strategies that help. And this is what I do when I feel this way. And, you know, guaranteed there were people out there like, wow, someone who can talk openly and honestly and share their story. I think those are the things that are going to make and affect real change.
Yes, because I feel like once I had a diagnosis and I could research the diagnosis and I could understand the symptoms and whatnot, then I could adjust my reaction. I could understand. I had that knowledge. Without that knowledge, I was just flying off the handle. Mm-hmm. Just like yeah. I said, you know, I'm beyond reproach. And I know a lot of people get hung up on, oh, well, everybody's diagnosed with everything or whatever nowadays. But I look at a diagnosis as a tool.
Yes.
I know I have this. I know I can function around this. Or whatever it is I have to do. And medication isn't easily accessible at all. Mm-hmm. So if you can even get a prescription, then trying to afford it. I had to come up with other ways because my medication's not covered by my insurance.
Oh, man.
How does music play a role in your life and in your mental health?
I have loved music since before I really had memories. It is a part of just who I am. And this is another thing that I've sat and thought about, because the amount of things that had to kind of quote, perfectly align. I had to be able to hear music the way that I hear music. I have to be able to balance sound in my head the way I do. All these things had to come together. And there's never been a point in my life where I have not been singing or acting. My acting is terrible, but I was doing it. And there is a feeling that vibrates my entire body. And it's just like it vibrates any negativity. It loosens everything up. I just feel this level of joy that I can't feel or find anywhere else than when I am singing or playing in a band. But I haven't played in a band in a while. It's something that is ingrained in me.
And we're so grateful you brought your talents to the She Said stage. So when we shared Bonnie's story, we cut it off before she did her grand finale performance. But Bonnie actually sang for us at the end of that show. And so you can go check it out on our YouTube channel. Or if we're lucky, maybe we can edit in a little bit of the song at the end of this episode. We'll see. But your voice is just so grounded. Your voice does that vibration thing for me. Like it vibrates in my soul and makes me happy. It makes me happy.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like a performance. It feels so genuine. And so, you know, when I walked into that event and you were singing, I was like, I immediately knew. Like, I was like, wait a dang minute. It's my bestie. But like, I knew it just that it, genuine is the best way I can describe it. It didn't feel like, oh, someone's up there performing. Mm-mm. It was like, oh, no. She's like, hey, girl, I'm over here, like that.
Let's sing a ditty. Yeah. Let's sing a tune. Why didn't you jump up on stage with her, Carrie?
Oh, girl, nobody needs to hear me sing. I have an awesome air guitar, but that's it.
So you play in a band in the Vermilion County, Danville area called In Bloom. Tell us a little bit about that journey.
Well, about 4 years ago, I started an electric band because I'd sang classic country forever, and I was getting real tired of Patsy and Loretta. And I wanted to sing Barracuda. I just wanted to sing Barracuda.
So that's what it comes down to.
Just that. So I started a whole electric band called the Filthy James, but I was still getting phone calls from like smaller venues to play acoustically. And so I was like, you know what? I like money, so we'll go do that. And over time, and especially like as we're kind of, well, we're not past COVID, but you know, as things are more open after COVID, the loud rockin' bands are not as in demand. People like the acoustic. We can still have a conversation over this music, but if we want to listen, we can. And so eventually In Bloom started getting way more phone calls than the Filthy James. And there was some, you know, band stuff as band stuff happens. And then the Filthy James just kind of went to the wayside. And I had every intention of starting another electric band, but In Bloom has become everything. We do originals now. We do the covers as well. We do everything from like corporate events to backyard parties. And our set list is for the ladies. I keep joking I'm going to change our logo to say In Bloom, Your Wife Will Love It. But it's absolutely catered with like Alanis Morissette and Amy Winehouse, Kacey Musgraves. Like it's music for women. And that's why She Said, honestly, people come to my shows and they're like, wait, you're the She Said lady.
Well, that's not a terrible association. I love that. Okay, I have a secret to share with you ladies.
Okay.
So long time ago, I dated a drummer and used to go and watch their band practice. And he was totally trying to get me to sing with the band. And the song he wanted me to sing, Barracuda.
No. Did you do it?
So yeah. I would practice in my shower, bedroom, car. So I get horrible stage fright when it comes to singing. I can speak in front of thousands of people, but you play music and I go like numb and paralyzed because I have like no pitch. So I wanted to so badly and I would practice it in my car, but no, I never had the guts to do it. Wow. Nope, but that was the song. I'll never forget.
See, full circle.
It's a tough one.
Oh, it's very tough. But they were looking for a female singer to do that song. And he was very encouraging. But I just, that's never been. Oof. There's definitely a little secret dream about, you know, me singing in public one day. But oof. I usually freeze up. So that's me.
I'm hearing karaoke now.
Yes.
I just need a little liquid courage. Just a little bit.
There we go.
A little bit. A little bit. But that's okay. No, but your singing is divine and so fun. And you're right. It's for the ladies. It was the perfect addition to That's What She Said and some other events that we've now gotten to enjoy you at. And we want to keep that going. We want to continue these relationships. When you talked earlier about, Carrie, you asked, you know, is it true? Do the cast bond and stick together? I had this little nugget in my head I wanted to save for the podcast. The Danville cast, literally 2 days ago, were having a whole text connection. Someone asked, was it you, Bonnie, or was it Bracey? Someone asked you, is it real? Is the She Said Sisterhood real? And the response was, yeah, it's a real thing. It's just like, you know, the sisterhood of the traveling pants, but no pants. And there's this whole text chain going, well, there's no pants. We don't need, it's just the sisterhood of no pants. And it became a whole, so that's the Danville cast for you. The sisterhood of no pants.
See, I knew I liked that crew.
Yeah, no, they're all the things.
Love them. All right. Well, it's not going to get any better than that. No. We may or may not have on pants right now, but it's time to wrap it up.
Bonnie Newberry, thank you so much. We're so happy to have you in the She Said Sisterhood. And now we get to share your very impactful story with a larger audience. Thanks to your time today and our amazing partners and sponsors. I'd like to thank Sterling Wealth Management and Carl Health. Thank you to our awesome team at Illinois Public Media and my beautiful, amazing sidekick co-host.
Yeah, keep it coming.
Carrie Russell. I can't even say it with a straight face.
You can say sexy. I know you want to. Go ahead.
And thank you to our awesome, awesome listeners out there for joining us today on the She Said Project podcast.
Over and out.
Thank you for listening to the She Said Project podcast in partnership with Illinois Public Media. All materials contained in the podcast are the exclusive property of the She Said Project and That's What She Said LLC. For more information on our live shows, go to shesaidproject.com. This podcast was made possible with support from Carl and Health Alliance and presented by Sterling Wealth Management, empowering women to live their best lives.
Bye, bestie.